welcome to the Sound of Economics podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I'm Sean Gibson, the new press officer at Bruegel, and I'm delighted to be hosting this, my first episode of the Sound of Economics. Today, we'll be talking to Zsolt Darvas, senior fellow at Bruegel. Hello, Zsolt.
Hello.
And we'll also be in conversation with Manu Bardwaj, vice president for research and insights at the Mastercard Centre for Inclusive Growth. Thanks for joining us, Manu.
Great to be here.
I was hoping I could sort of lead off the discussion with a few questions centred on some of the research that you, Zsolt, have recently led into European immigration policy challenges, specifically the impact and the integration of migrants. You make the argument that Europe has become an immigration area. Can you elaborate what that means exactly and maybe pick out some of the major factors that brought that to be in Europe?
There has been major changes to demographic developments in Europe. Let's say after the Second World War, natural increase in population was quite substantial, meaning that many more children were born than old people or other people died. But there was a quite long-lasting fall in this source of population increase. And by the late 1990s, practically natural change in EU population went down to zero. On the contrary, immigration was almost zero in net terms up to the mid-1980s. But since then, immigration has been increasing into the European Union and has become a more important source of population increase in Europe than natural change. And in fact, 2015 was the first year when there was a natural decline in Europe, so more people died than who were born. And at the same time, immigration has increased. So clearly, the only source of population growth in Europe is immigration now. So in this sense, Europe became an immigration area.
What's great about, Zsolt, some of your findings is looking really specifically at this population of refugees and migrants as they come in to Europe, vulnerable populations that often don't have the networks or the skills to be successful or to be economically integrated. At the Center for Inclusive Growth, these types of vulnerable populations are a key focus area for us, because we're always looking to find solutions and approaches for better integrating them economically, spreading the benefits of income equality more proportionally. And we thought that this was a really exciting test case, and your research really highlighted some really practical solutions for how to help refugees and migrants, especially those that are now coming in at a very accelerated pace. So thank you for your research.
I suppose that can bring us on to another topic that you've covered, Zsolt, in your research, the topic of refugees. It's quite difficult to talk about the movement of people in Europe without talking about refugees in recent years. You've acknowledged the crucial aspect of this kind of financial inclusion of refugees in integrating as a newcomer in Europe. What can Europe really do to help take this on further? Where does the future lie for refugees and greater financial inclusion?
In a developed area like the European Union, which is heavily banked and financial services practically participate in the everyday life of people, it's really, really crucial to have access certain type of financial services. For example, if someone would like to receive a government subsidy or a salary, he or she has to have a bank account. If someone would like to go on purchases, at least a basic payment card is really essential. If there are relatives in the home country, making a money transfer, cross-border money transfer is really, really essential. So financial inclusion is really a very important step in the more economic and social inclusion of any person. throughout the world, but also including in the European Union. But the research we conducted suggested that there are major, major problems. What we did is that we surveyed banks who are offering financial services to refugees and basically asked the questions whether they believe that the regulation which governs, for example, anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing goals strike a right balance between achieving these goals, because certainly it's very, very important that, you know, terrorists should not be allowed to have a bank account in Europe, but whether it strikes a right balance between achieving these goals on the one hand and offering financial services to refugees on the other hand. And the answer we received is that the majority of banks believes that the regulation is too tight, meaning that they find it very, very difficult to offer financial services to refugees. Clearly, a basic problem is identification, because many of these people don't have proper identification. So we came to the conclusion that a major change would be needed in the system, how refugees are identified. And the solution, which came from the idea of the survey, is consists of a number of steps. First of all, a European ID to each refugee would be really, really helpful. This European ID should be linked to a system whereby there's a pan-European registry of refugees, which are linked, of course, to national registries, because countries do all of the works, most of the works by themselves, but there should be a centralized information flow to which a financial institution would have access, and they could see, look, this refugee has a valid permit to stay in this country for a certain amount of period. That would make it much easier to include them financially.
Given the influx that we're seeing in Europe of refugees, this type of analysis comes exactly at the right time. We really need to be thinking of a systemic, comprehensive approach to, you know, these issues like financial inclusion. And I think in many ways there are the requirements that are understandable in Europe and elsewhere, but really providing financial institutions and other companies and stakeholders clear guidance on something that might work in Rome, that will also work in Berlin, that will also work in Brussels, so there's more uniformity amongst member states.
One other important result we found is that some regulatory authorities in member states issued guidelines, basically offering clear way how to handle refugees and how to involve them. In Germany, they have even introduced a new system, but in only half of the countries. So even if financial regulation is not changed, I think a major improvement could be achieved if in all countries, the responsible supervisor and regulatory authorities would issue clear guidelines on how, what procedure should be conducted in respect with a refugee or asylum seeker.
Okay. If we perhaps look at this, the aspect of individual Europeans' general outlook on immigration, your research, Jolt, appeared to suggest there is an increasing approval of migration within the EU, the movement of intra-EU movement of people. This doesn't necessarily fit with some more popular perceptions of a increased nationalism within the EU in various member states. So where might this approval of intra-EU mobility be coming from, and were there any outstanding trends in member states that you found?
Indeed. So if you look at, for example, reports in the media, you find many, many reports that people are very anti-immigration, from all kinds of immigration, from both inside and outside of the EU. For example, in the United Kingdom, before the referendum on EU membership in June 2016, a large part of the campaign was about immigrants from other European Union countries, like Polish plumbers coming to the UK, stealing the job of native people. But it's quite interesting that if you look at the data suggests that there is a steady increase in support for this intra-EU immigration. Even in the United Kingdom, the support for intra-EU migration now, in 2017, is higher than it was last year and higher than it was in 2015, 2 years ago. Basically, in all countries but Romania, in all other 27 member states, there was an increase for support for immigration. Again, this is in stark contrast also in some other political debates, for example, in France or Netherlands or Germany, three countries that had elections earlier this year, where anti-immigration sentiment was a very strong in a number of political parties. So what could explain? I would say two or three reasons. One is that the economic situation throughout Europe is improving. So probably people see less of a kind of competition from other European immigrants coming in. I think that can be an important factor. Another factor could be the increasing labor shortages. Again, if you look at the data, we see that both in Western European countries like Germany and UK, but also in Central European countries, labor shortages are increasing throughout the economy, in industry, construction, services, and in many other factors. And then people think, either nobody will do this job or it would be better to have someone do this job. And the possible third reason could be related to large inflow of refugees and non-EU people. So I can't exclude the hypothesis that when, let's say, somebody in France or UK or in Germany will have to choose, whether to let's say, a Polish plumber in or someone from outside the EU, then they may have a stronger preference for someone else from the European Union.
Many of these refugees are essentially people without a country. And when I visited some of these refugee settlements, it's really remarkable how much they view European countries as a bastion of hope, a place to come and a secure economic opportunity, to secure education. And it's quite a compliment to the EU member states and the Commission as a whole that they're viewed in this very positive way, and they're providing opportunity, real tangible opportunity, to millions of refugees. And it's really remarkable. And I think there should be probably even more commendation from the United States, from other countries, and from the private sector for all that EU countries are doing to help bring up these communities of people from Africa, from all throughout the region, who really are kind of looking at Europe in a way, as the way, maybe the only way, for them to achieve, their hopes. So I hope that when people read the research, they really also come away with just how much is happening in Europe and how much people are benefiting by some of the policies that are being implemented.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. That brings us to the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening to The Sound of Economics, and thanks to my guests, Jolt and Manu. If you're interested in more Bruegger work on European immigration policy, you can find a range of our blogs and research papers on our website at www.bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again for The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.